You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Is there one?
Hello.
Greetings, and welcome back to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. Before I announce tonight's guest, I'd like to extend a special thanks to my group at Yahoo, Awakening Cosmic Consciousness, and especially to Alicia for tuning in. Tonight, I have a very special guest, Stuart Wild. Stuart is known as an urban mystic and modern visionary, author, and lecturer. He has written over 18 books on consciousness and awareness. He has a humorous and simple way of explaining things that is controversial, self-empowering, mystical, and transformational. His writings include the very successful Taoist Quintet, and we will no doubt be discussing his newly released book, Grace, Gaia, and the End of Days, which is a wonderful read. His books have sold in the millions and have been translated into 15 languages, so let's welcome him to the show now.
Hi, Thank Stuart. You very much, Lance.
No, you're welcome.
It's a pleasure.
I've been reading your newsletter for quite a few years, and your recent book is just an amazing, amazing book. Disturbing, but amazing. What prompted you to write another book?
Well, I wrote a book called The Art of Redemption that really set up this journey inside, you know, one's sins and, you know, the process of becoming a whole person, you know, not hiding one's darkness. And it was, The Art of Redemption was very much like a manual of how to get out of the matrix and set yourself free. And then Grace Guy in the End of the Days is like the sister book to The Art of Redemption. It kind of followed on. So it was all the stuff that wasn't discussed in the first book. And it talks to people about these other worlds and the mirror worlds and the reality of spirit worlds and beings that are here to help us, beings that are fighting with us. It's really like an Armageddon book, really.
Yes, yes it is. If I understand correctly, maybe we can go over some of these different worlds and you can help others understand what they are. The Aluna is one of the worlds that you speak of. It's a mirror world. Which resides within arm's length. Am I getting that right?
Yes, it's facing us. And it's akin to Dirac's antiparticle world. He wrote a paper in the 1930s, and he calculated mathematically, but he'd never seen it. And we watch it in trance, and every single human alive has another self in there, like a doppelganger, a double.
Huh.
And so your soul and your spirit is in this spirit world. So people don't die and go to heaven. They're already in heaven, or they're already in hell.
Huh.
And so we're alive in two places. And we watch these worlds, and everything that happens in our world happens in the Aluna world first. That's why we're so accurately able to predict, you know, when, you know, what's going to happen. What we can't say is exactly precisely when it will happen because the timelines are a little wobbly, you know.
Huh. You'd go into great depth about the dark side.
Yes.
And, you know, one thing I've noticed that as we awaken in this planet that we're on, it seems that everywhere you look, you see what could be termed evil and corruption and greed and the fall of things. Would you describe that?
In my books, I call it the empire of the snake, because we're surrounded, you know. But, you know, as I say in my books, we're here to kind of work our way out of this prison, and the way we do it is through grace, through love, through forgiveness. You know, you beg for forgiveness for your predilections and your crimes, and you forgive everybody else as well. You know, love your tormentors. Love your tormentors, you know. So I teach people to become soft, to embrace what I call the three graces, which is tenderness, respect, and generosity of spirit, and come to some equitable compromise inside yourself where, hey, you know you're imperfect, but you're a child of God, and you can look this golden light in the eye and know that you are what you are, you know?
Right, right.
Yeah, so it's a sort of a form of, it's a more complicated form of just love. It's pure love, but it's love with a lot of metaphysical understanding of the fact that you're not perfect, and the people that are wandering around pretending to be perfect are in great danger, you know?
Well, you know, it's almost spooky the way you describe it, that there's so many things that we're not aware of that we don't see. Maybe it's better that we don't see them, you know.
Well, yes and no, you know. I think if you're able to, if you're prepared to look inside yourself, you're going to see things, you know.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And one of the things that disturbs me the most is the sort of the degradation of the feminine spirit.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
The way that femininity is degraded in our world,
yes,
is absolutely revolting. And so, but the Tao, the, you know, the grace, the God force, you know, whatever you want to call it, it's a feminine energy. It's, you know, like God's a woman, you know, at least God's very feminine.
Yeah.
So we have to respect femininity, and we have to care for people, and we have to have time for them, and we can't be sort of cruel and hard and nasty, you know?
Right. Well, it seems
that's my message to people, you know, like you have to be tender in order to save your soul, you know?
Well, it seems like all the religions, especially, I hate to focus on the Catholic religion, but they seem to all kind of remove the feminine aspect. Is that to gain control over the followers?
I think so. I mean, the Catholics sort of wrote out the sort of the Virgin Mary as a god, I think it's sort of 300 AD at the Council of Nicaea, and this is totally off the top of my head, but somewhere in and around there.
Uh-huh.
And so the sort of the father, mother, child, trinity was replaced with this Holy Ghost. Well, I ain't never met no ghosts that are holy. Like a cock. You know, all the ghosts I've ever met are ghouls, you know. So, I mean, it was a crock. And I think one of the things that is happening nowadays is we're going to gradually reestablish the trinity. And the trinity is a softness inside a male, or it's the femininity inside a female. It's not that the women are the only custodians of softness, you know. They're not. You know, men can be very powerful and strong, and they can be real warriors and fighters and kind providers, and they can have a tenderness and a softness, and that's what I teach my people. I tell them, be soft and be very strong as well.
Mm. It's also very important to develop a connection and a true love for nature and for the planet, isn't it?
Very much so. I mean, I'm a great sort of, I mean, I'm not an animal rights activist in so much as that I don't sort of, you know, I don't know, you know, protest at City Hall, but the pain of Gaia, the pain of Gaia is enormous, you know, and I have a YouTube channel, Stuart Wild One, and I'm just about to mount a video called The Tears of Gaia.
Oh.
It'll go up in the next couple of days, and it talks about the tears and the terror that the animal kingdom face with us as their attackers, as their predators. So walking in a forest, you clean your soul, you know. Working in your garden, you clean your soul. You know, being out in the park is another cleansing exercise. Is loving the animals and being a part of their soul makes your soul more. And so I'm a great believer in the whole animal kingdom thing and Gaia, and I see Gaia as a goddess. Mm-hmm. Lovelock saw Gaia as an intelligence that, let's say, controlled the earth, you know, the ecosystems, the temperature, the biodiversity of the earth. And that essentially is the case, but we see Gaia as a goddess. So in the same way as we believe we're spirits inside a physical form, we believe that Gaia is a goddess and her physical form is this planet.
Well, I know that I live out in the woods, more or less. I mean, a couple of miles from the downtown, and I just put up a couple of hummingbird feeders, and it's just a miraculous thing to be able to watch them coming and going and communicate with them, and you know, just
yes,
be within a foot or two of them. And I just love, you know, being in nature, and even the bugs are interesting.
Everything's interesting.
Everything,
it's all part of
yeah.
it. Yeah,
yeah,
everything's interesting. Yeah.
Now, one of the things that you talk about, which is coming up a lot because of the Mayan prophecies and some of the other prophecies, the biblical and the Hopi and the other prophecies, is that many people believe that these are the end times, finally,
yes,
that we are living in them, and in fact they're unfolding as we speak.
Yes.
How do you view that, and what's the time frame, and what do you think will happen?
Well, I don't believe, let's say, for example, that the world will end, you know, but I think the world as we know it is coming to an end.
Yeah.
So the extremes of egotism, greed is good, you know, consumerism, state-sponsored violence, I think all of that stuff will gradually end as we become more conscious and we realize, hey, we don't have a fight against these people. Why are we sending people, our boys and our girls, out to be mutilated for no reason at all?
Yeah.
So I think some of these concepts that now we think are fine will become not fine. and the world will become a softer place, because also, as things sort of struggle economically and so on, people will have to come back together and work together to survive. And so I think we'll see a sort of rebirth of the tribal spirit, celebration, families. And certainly, yeah, this world's going to change. I don't know whether the world will end in December the 23rd, 2012, but we are moving into this end period, you know, and I don't know whether the Mayans have it right or not. I'm not qualified to say.
Yeah, even Terrence McKenna came up with his theory, Time Wave Zero, which coincidentally ended around 2012, and he was quite a proponent of various substances to alter your consciousness.
Well, of course, McKenna took a lot of ayahuasca, and he did a lot of those hallucinogenics. And, you know, I promote ayahuasca a lot around the world, and I've done ayahuasca ceremonies in Ecuador and in other places, and I'm a great believer in ayahuasca because it allows people to see these lunar worlds very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And ayahuasca shows you your shadow. It helps you to sort of, you know, process karma quickly, because now we're on a rush, you know?
Right, right.
And so I was a great, great believer in McKenna, and I very much admired his work, and I read his books and so forth. And he was the father of ayahuasca in the West, himself and Louis Luna, who wrote a paper in the 1970s and kind of introduced ayahuasca to the Western world. And so, yeah, McKenna was major, you know?
Yes, yes. What are some of the consistent things that people see when they cross over into these other worlds that validates that they're seeing the same things?
Well, essentially, they all see the same things. They just describe them in different ways.
Okay.
So a lot of it is the celestial world. They're all very digital and fractal. There's a lot of very beautiful beings in there. Some of them are like 60 feet tall, golden beings. And then they describe the ghouls and the dark worlds and the hell worlds. And then they can watch the battle that's going on between the forces of light and the forces of dark. And then, you know, those worlds teach you. So they taught us, like, the directions of where these dimensions are. And sometimes we see visions of things that are unfolding socially or politically in the world. And so it's a sort of vast university. I mean, there's no way that we could even learn 1% of it in 100 years, you know?
Why do you think we are so veiled in consciousness and sleep and live in such an unconscious state all the time? Is this because...
Yeah, it's mysterious. I mean, we do live in a world where all information is controlled, isn't it? I mean, I call it TikTok in my books, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So the whole TikTok of TV and politics and the need to sort of conform and so forth, you know, the sort of the dogma of the status quo. So a lot of people are scared to break out of that. And then I think nowadays people are becoming more and more courageous because they look at the dogma of the status quo and they see it as a crock, and they don't necessarily, you know, agree with what's going on. But they're not prepared to confront or stick their head above the parapet. And I completely understand that tactic, you know. But I think the world is looking. People are looking, and people are becoming more aware. And I see a great hope. I see a birth inside people where gradually they'll wake up. And then the things may happen in the world that will really wake people up. You know, for example, avian flu, you know?
Yeah.
If that comes on gangbusters, people are going to get scared. But then sometimes when they get scared, that's how they wake up and start asking questions, you know?
It does seem that we have to push either push ourselves as creating it ourselves or be pushed, depending on how you look at creation, against the wall to make some kind of drastic changes, and that's what it's going to take, because we're all kind of in denial about what's going on here.
Yes, well that is the case. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, I think you're right on the button. I mean, people are in denial. But, you know, this financial crisis is just the first rattling of an even bigger crisis, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, I mean, I believe that I've always said to people that they should invest in themselves, you know? I mean, for 20 years I've been telling that, you know, invest in yourself.
Absolutely.
Train to become something, learn something, you know? Don't spend money on stupid things like cars and clothes and stuff. You know, invest in becoming an acupuncturist, or invest in study groups or courses or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that's very important, because you have to have a skill or a knowledge or a product that you will offer the world in order to make a living, you know?
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
And then if the world changes, it's going to actually wipe a lot of people out, because they may not be ready for those changes, you know? But I don't know, it's sort of, in many ways, the agony and the ecstasy is in both hands, isn't it? We've got the agony in the left hand and the ecstasy in the right hand. We have the solution and the problem.
Sometimes I wonder if there isn't some kind of ancient battle occurring in the higher realms that's being played out that kind of trickles down into the three-dimensional world.
No, that's completely right, Lance. I mean, that's 100% correct. You know, there's a huge fight going on in the lunar worlds all the time at the moment. And it is like trillions and trillions of demonic forces that are fighting against the light forces. So there is definitely a battle going on day and night, 25 a day. And that battle is inside each person as well, because I see Armageddon as a personal battle inside you, you know, for your fears, for your doubts, for your confusions, you know, a battle to kind of go past the ego and the mind and allow a higher consciousness to blip through and filter in and give people new ideas and give them the courage to walk away, you know, the courage to, you know, Roland May wrote a great book once called The Courage to Create, and he said, like, to create things, you know, is disturbing to a lot of people because they may be judged or ridiculed if they paint a painting or write a book or do something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there's the courage to create, there's the courage to escape, there's the courage to try something different, there's the courage to, you know, I don't know, be criticized if you're not exactly like all the drones that are trotting around the shopping mall on the way to Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it takes courage. It does take courage to make those changes. And I write in my early books, I used to write about the fringe dwellers. And I describe the fringe dwellers, and they're not revolutionaries or dreadlock hippies or anything like that. They're just ordinary people who kind of don't fit.
Yeah.
And, you know, they may work at a post office for 40 years, but their ideas and their emotions and their feelings and their beliefs, they don't fit. And they yearn and seek for a solution, an answer. So I've always directed all of my writings and my work to supplying those fringe dwellers, you know, the information they want, and hopefully to endorse their courage to break out and break away and get out of lousy marriages and lousy jobs and difficult situations and horrible relatives, you know, and, you know, and become free, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Where do you think you've seen so much more than most of us will ever see in a thousand lifetimes? Where do you think that the evil that we are seeing manifesting in the world today originates from? Where does it come from?
Well, it's hidden inside each human. You know, nobody walks along and says, "Look, I'm Hitler, and I chuck people to the death camps every afternoon at 3 o'clock." You know, everybody's playing out this Mr. Nice Guy, goody-goody-two-shoes image, you know?
Yeah.
But the darkness is hidden inside humans. It's hidden inside their soul. So the initial darkness of those evil worlds came from humans. Okay, it may have come from humans that were alive 5,000, 10,000 years ago, but that's how it was created. And we all feed the dark or we feed the light. It just depends on our alignment. So that information comes out of the Aluna and drips feeds into the minds of different humans. And in many people, it finds no congruence because they are truly tender and soft and caring and warm and loving.
Mm.
And other people are power hungry and ugly and nasty and they're predators, and they act on the impulses they receive from those inner worlds, you know?
Right, right.
So right. We're not exactly on a level playing field because the dark is everywhere, but then there's nothing to be scared of. You just have to embrace your light and your celestial self. You know, there's that article on my blog about embracing your divinity. You know, you've got to believe in your divinity. It doesn't matter how ludicrous your life is,
right?
You know, but you're still inside you. There's this eternal, immortal person, and you have to believe in that.
Yeah.
And if you believe in it, the energy grows.
Yes. Yes. I totally agree with that. It doesn't. in most of the spiritual traditions over the thousands of years, it seems like the light always seems to win in the end, doesn't it? I mean,
yes, I believe it does.
I would think if there was a loving God, that you fill in the name or the blank, whatever you want to call it, that
yeah.
It would probably have a few tricks up its sleeve against any permutations that the dark might attempt, and they can probably be pretty clever.
Yeah, no, I mean, we see that all the time, and when we see these beings in the lunar world, you know, acting in a very military way, and they're very intelligent.
Yeah.
But, of course, you know, if God could come down here and fix the planet, I'm sure he or she would arrive tomorrow, you know?
Right,
one great
right.
flap of their wing or whatever, and it's all fixed. But they can't get in here because it's too dark. I mean, it would degrade them. I mean, their patina, their essence, I mean, they would fall apart if they came too close.
Right.
So, in a way, they just talk to humans and tell us to go fight instead. And we have a vested interest in trying to clean up the joint because we're living here. You know, the neighborhood's gone down the drain.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what it's about, really. But yeah, no, the dark, I'm sure the light wins in the end. And then the ghouls eventually recapture the earth, and then there's another Armageddon, another fight, and then so forth and so on, you know?
So things just kind of keep repeating themselves, and there are new players that get to play with this game board, I guess.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, there's new people that are power hungry, power trippers, predators, da 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 da, all of the above. You know, and it's always going to be like that. You know, and then there's with all the darkness that we've got around us, we've also have the capacity to generate more light and more power. You know,
yeah.
I say in my book that grace is data driven. You know, we see it as a golden light, but I mean, it has trillions and trillions of terabytes of information in it. And that's how we've come to learn so much about these inner worlds. I mean, I've had like maybe, well, I've documented 200,000 visions in 8 years, and I've probably had 500,000. And other people that I communicate with, visionaries and so forth, you know, they're watching the same worlds as me, and we're watching different aspects of it, but it's kind of the same story. But, you know, grace is there. It's given us the information on how to escape, how to teach other people to escape, how to, you know, make oneself safe from attack of ghouls, and how to make yourself safe in 3D and so forth. It's there to help, you know.
Well, thank goodness for trailblazers like you and all the people who are courageous enough to step off the normal path and deviate into these other realms, which, you know, need to be explored and opened and talked about and embraced.
Definitely. I mean, there's so much that people don't know, and of course, you know, like when a person can't see, they really are traveling blind. And I do 2 gigs a year, like one in Amsterdam and one in Las Vegas. And it's kind of a weekend of trying to teach people how to see visions and stuff like that. Because I feel that once a person can meditate and see visions, then they link it to what I call pure information. And pure information is stuff that's downloaded from these lunar worlds to you that appertains to your condition, your situation, your relationships, your life, you know?
Right.
So it's not more, it's not so much like general information that you might find in a book, but more specific to you. And so I teach people to see because I feel, well, when they can see, they will come safer.
Uh-huh.
But in the end, the whole of humanity has to learn to see, you know? They're not allowed to stick their head in the sand and pretend anymore, you know?
Are the energies on the planet shifting so that people, the veils are thinning between the various dimensions so that people can see more clearly?
100% correct, sir. Yes, absolutely.
Oh, good.
Yeah, the barrier between that world and our world has changed dramatically. And in fact, when that world projects this energy towards us that I call the morph, which looks like sort of dry rain, it has striations in it, the walls go soapy looking, the floor disappears, and the humans dematerialize. So that's how, like, non-solid we are. So we are sort of like 1 foot in that world and another 1 foot in our world.
Huh.
So which gives us great hope because we're closer to the source of all inspiration. We're closer to the healing. We're closer to the miracle of it all. And it is closer to us. And I think the reason it's got closer is because these are traumatic times that we're living in, you know?
Well, one thing that seems fairly certain is, from my viewpoint, is that things, as they are, simply cannot go on as they have been. And that something big is on the way because there are too many holes in the dike that are breaking, and I have a feeling that we're going to be finding out within the next couple of years that, you know, things are not what they seem.
things are not what they seem. And, you know, we've been watching what we call these Gaia hits, and they're essentially, we see them as visions of these arrows hitting the Earth, and I don't know whether it means it's a meteor, an asteroid, or what it is, you know?
Right.
We don't have any specifics, but we do see these monumental changes happening overnight.
Yes.
Where something happens, you know?
And it'll happen.
I'm sorry, Lance?
Yeah, it will be a quick change, won't it?
Yeah, like it's from Thursday to Friday, you know, it's like overnight. And so we don't know what that is, but, you know, we can't live in fear. We just have
right.
to believe in our own positive nature and our goodness and stuff, you know.
Now, I had an experience probably about 5 or 6 years ago, and as I was reading your book, I was wondering if this was something that I was seeing that you described. I was alone in my room. I wasn't on any drugs or any alcohol or anything like that. And I could see these little, they were like dark, floating shredded things. They were like just dark, wispy things hanging in the air. I mean, if I didn't know better, it would look like there had been a fire and there might be ash just floating in the air, except that they were alive. And
were they like wriggling? Were they like little, very thin little worms that were moving very fast?
Very slowly. And
were they moving slowly?
They were coming close. They seemed to be attracted to me and to my breath, and they would get very close to my mouth. And then if I blew, it would blow them away. But they were very curious. I could feel the curiosity. It would be terrifying, except that it was so fascinating, and it went on for about an hour. And
yeah.
One of the things that you're talking about?
Yeah, yeah, we see those things all the time. You know, we see spiders, we see little beings. There's trillions and trillions and trillions of beings, and of course some of them feed off our heat.
Yeah.
So they kind of they're heat seeking.
Yeah.
And so
Ooh.
They come towards you to feed, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, they're commonplace, and in the morph you can see them all the time. I mean, not just ghouls, but like genuine little entities that are hanging around that want to be with you, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And sometimes you see these strange beings that come up and they look at you and they stare and stare and stare and they're puzzled. It's almost like they have never seen a human, but they're intrigued, you know?
Yes,
and they're
yeah.
off to go again. That's right.
Oh, geez. Well, you know, how do people, I guess you can tell when those things are, you can know where those things exist because there's a different energy when you're walking down a street in a strange city that has adult bookstores and, you know, various other things. It seems to attract a lower energy, and you can feel the frequency and the vibration there. And I often feel, well, I don't go there anymore, but, in those situations I have felt just like I've been assaulted and attacked from every direction. It's very frightening.
Yeah, well, when you're going into those sorts of places, it is dangerous. I wrote an article called, Poisonous People in Dangerous Places, which actually I think is in the book as well, Grace Guy and the End of Days, where I talk about people that are like particularly demonically possessed or particularly dark, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, you want to kind of dry clean your life of those characters. And then if you do wander around the red light district at 4 o'clock in the morning, you will be attacked by the ghouls and you do open yourself up for demonic interference, because you're in a place where a lot of that's going on, you know.
And
so
there are
people too. I'm sorry, Lance.
And there are people who practice various forms of psychic vampirism, and who can literally will follow you and suck your energy from behind you without your knowing it.
Yes, absolutely. That happens all the time, and the ghouls can latch on to people, and they can get inside their bodies, and they can feed off them. But the person has to be dark, and they have to have the same predatory instincts in order for that to happen, you know?
Yeah.
And then they have to expose themselves to danger. So I tell people, hey, be careful where you go, you know, watch, be careful. I mean, you can't be too kind of prissy and uptight, but, you know, there's certain people, you know they're dark, you know they're dangerous, and so, like, you know, you got to stay away, because otherwise you get, like, sucked into the sort of excitement of it all, you know?
Right. It seems that holding the highest love in your heart and compassion and laughter keeps that at bay.
Very much so, you know, very much so. And there's a purity of spirit as well. And by purity of spirit, again, I don't mean sort of religious prissy rules.
Right, right.
But, you know, like offering a soft eye to humanity, offering forgiveness, a gentle voice, a kindness, you know, taking time to be there for people, you know, and just having this tenderness, you know, we call it, walking along the banks of the Tao. It's like we walk in balance, we try to stay balanced inside these worlds, you know?
Yes.
And
now,
that's safety. Safety is in the balance, it's in the silence, it's in the quietness, it's in, you know, this equitable stance.
Now, there are other worlds that you talk about that are fascinating, too, that have to do with Camelot and the vibrating, what is it, not the vibrating door,
the shimmering door?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I believe in these Camelot anomalies that are essentially archways, and they're all over everywhere. Literally, when you walk through the arch, you will disappear. So a person was, if there was an arch on the sidewalk, they'd be watching you go down the sidewalk, and as you go through the arch, you're no longer there on the sidewalk.
Wow.
And these anomalies are literally portals into another world, and we know many of them, and I've documented hundreds of them. And some of them are on city streets, and some of them are in you know, sacred places, and some of them are just in a field, an island, let's say, you know?
Uh-huh.
And at that particular place, there's a doorway. It's made of hexagonal rings, like a silver rings, and the doorway shimmers. And so I named it the Shimmering Door, and the door shimmers at 240 beats a minute, so four cycles a second. Twice the dance beat, I tell people, if they want to know how fast it's shimmering. Because like a dance beat's 126, so roughly speaking, 240 is double that, you know?
Interesting.
Yeah. And so there is a possibility to walk into those worlds, and I call it the Camelots because it's a world of softness, it's a world of beauty, femininity, my lady fair, chivalry, you know, all of that, warmth, celestial warmth.
That sounds like a wonderful place, and I believe that all of those metaphors and worlds that we've read about in fairy tales and the rest with divas and spirits, those are all describing very real places.
Yes, you know, I think somebody that says, for example, like Josephine Wall, who paints all those paintings of fairies and andes and so forth,
mm-hmm.
I mean, she can't paint those worlds unless she sees them in her dreams or in her visions, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, I mean, they do exist. All those magical kingdoms do exist somewhere in the multi-dimensional hyperspace that we watch. And then sometimes we can see those worlds and we know they exist.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, the visionaries are seeing something that is already there and then coming back and writing about it. Rather than the other way around. It's not like they're inventing these worlds and then creating them. I think it's more like the worlds are already there.
Yeah, right.
And there is a world for softness and kindness, and there is a world for tenderness, and there is a world far from the madding crowd where, you know, all evil is shed away and you can rest inside a celestial peace where you're made whole, not perfect, but hey, you accept yourself as a complete being.
Well, it seems to be important during these times to choose wisely.
Yes, choose wisely. You know, do not allow yourself to be pulled out of position. You know, walk slowly, walk placidly amid the waste, I say in my books, you know. Walk placidly amid the waste. Don't go swinging off to the left or swinging off to the right. You know, just stay steady, be in control, you know, walk slowly. You know, and be at one and at peace with all things, and that grants you safety, that grants you clarity, you know, and I tell people, no fear, no anger. You know, don't get angry, don't be scared, just be inside yourself and stay steady. I recommend meditation. I don't know if you are keen on that or not.
I beg your pardon?
I was saying, Lance, I recommend meditation, but I don't know if it's something that you're particularly keen on, but I think that people should meditate because for 24 minutes every day, they're silent, they're at peace with themselves, they get impressions of, you know, things to do, problem solving, and so I'm a great believer in meditation, you know?
Oh, yes. And you said something interesting about meat eating, too, which was a subject in my group recently. We had a big discussion about, you know, the difference between eating meat and vegan diets, and you recommend that we stick to a diet that's not meat-based.
Well, yes, I mean, I don't insist that people become vegetarians, but none of the people that I know that can see inside these worlds and that have the command of these, what are essentially extraordinary perceptions and extraordinary abilities, not one of them is a meat-eater.
Right.
And I think you can't really ingest all that sort of pain and anguish and eat meat because it's the antithesis. But also we feel that a respect for femininity in Gaia is very important. And so if you're like eating her children, I don't know if that's particularly impressive, you know?
Uh-huh.
So we don't eat meat. But then again, I'm not wagging my finger and telling people to become a vegetarian, you know?
Right, right.
It's like I don't have an insistence because the central thing of my philosophy is like live and let live. Allow each person to be, you know, and allow them to go and continue in whatever which way they want to continue, you know?
Mm.
And then you have to set boundaries if they're upsetting you or they're infringing upon you. You have to set boundaries. But essentially, live and let live is my central theme. And the animals, they deserve a kindness. They deserve a kindness. They deserve to be cared for and loved, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, I see them as spiritual beings, you know, real spiritual beings that evolve the same as we evolve. And so, I don't know. It's just doesn't seem kind to kill them and eat them.
I know, and especially when I hear about dolphins being killed over in Japan for food, it's just...
That's strange. Do they have, like, dolphin sushi? I didn't know that.
I'm just taken aback when I hear that.
Yeah, that's extraordinary.
And the whales, you know, the whales, too.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's fair about the whales either. You know, so I think the whales should be left alone. But I don't know, it's just, I suppose a whale must be very valuable to the fishermen. There's just so much meat, I mean, a fish meat or whatever it is that they want from him. But it doesn't seem fair at all, you know, the same way as I'm not a great believer in bullfighting, you know.
Right.
And that completely disgusts me, and I'm very anti-bullfighting. And then, hey, I'm not here to, you know, I don't know, campaign against bullfighters, you know. I just don't agree with it, that's all, because I think it's so degrading on the bull. And the bulls know they're going to die. They're brave. They know they're going to die.
Right.
But it just seems so disgusting that people would be entertained by the death of this magnificent being, you know.
Absolutely.
And, it feels like the sort of Colosseum, you know, and the sort of the bony fingers of the hags at the guillotine knitting, you know.
Mm.
It's like ghoulishness.
We've also here in America, we have encouraged so many lower life forms in, you know, the public arena, such as the wrestling matches and the car races and the various games, and these mass events seem to attract a very strong kind of dark or evil presence. Am I right or not?
Yes, I mean, I can see it all the time, and also I think internet pornography is particularly sort of lascivious, and it degrades people's soul, and then again...
Yeah.
You know, I'm not here wagging my finger saying, you know, internet pornography should be banned. I think people should do what they want to do. But you can't degrade the feminine spirit like that and feel connected to God, you know?
Right.
Or feel connected to the eternity and things. I mean, you have to have a respect. And you have to have a respect for other people. And I don't know, very violent wrestling matches. I don't know, is it a sport? I mean, it never seemed like a sport to me. It seemed more like a sort of theatrics and entertainment, really.
Right.
It's like more of a bloodletting, isn't it, really? Everybody's really uptight, screaming and shouting, you know? It's like life in the Colosseum, you know? I mean, you know, I sort of can't really imagine sitting there in a hot sun and watching the sort of Christians being eaten by the lions. I mean, I can't see what the entertainment was, you know?
Yeah, we're in one big Fellini movie.
Yeah, one big Fellini movie. You know, I'd be on the side of the lions all the time, I think.
Well, now one of the things that concerns so many people has to do with the banking system and the people who control it. The word Illuminati gets tossed around quite a bit.
Yes.
And reptilians and greys.
Yes.
What do you think about all that? I mean, they're not going to let their positions or their hold on the planet go easily.
No, definitely not.
It seems that there's going to have to be some kind of impulse from outside the matrix to loosen that up, so to speak.
Yes, it's a very fascinating subject. I've kind of got out of conspiracy theories over the years because essentially I believe them all.
I believe everything.
The greys are real. The greys are real. They're inner beings. They're inner beings that are linked to the UFOs, and the UFOs are linked to the reptilians, and we know that by watching the Illuminati, you know?
Yeah.
And David Icke's more extreme theories of, like, shape-shifting humans that become, you know, shape-shifted into reptiles, that is absolutely 100% correct.
Really?
Yeah, it's not to say that every human is shape-shifting into a reptile, but the fact that it does happen is 100% correct.
I thought so.
And then, I'm sorry, Lance?
I thought so.
Yeah, it's real. It's real. We can see it in the Illuna.
Okay,
and the Illuminati banking families and the big, you know, the big banks and the Israelis and the Italians and the this and the that. Yeah, they control the money. You know, they control all the money. And they're not going to give up control of the money. It's like, hey, you know, you're on the mafia's patch, and Mr. Mancini isn't going to allow you to set up a business without paying your dues, you know?
Yeah.
It's like that. I mean, it's just like the neighborhood, man. You know, they run the neighborhood, and there's nothing else you can do about it, you know? But I think also if people get out of it, because they can get so distressed and disturbed about the money and the conspiracy and the banking system and the Federal Reserve and so forth, and in the end, hey, why don't you just turn to your loved one and kiss them and buy them some flowers and let's walk hand in hand and never mind the IRS and the banking system, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you could rile against it, but you're not going to change it much, I don't think. And then I think the world will probably evolve out of these situations gradually over time, you know?
Yeah, I think you can just work on yourself, and that's what causes the change in the what we see out there.
Exactly. And then to say this world is like influenced by very, very demonic people and controlled by like megalomaniacs. I mean, who in their right mind would say it wasn't? You know,
right.
Of course, it's run by megalomaniacs, and of course they're corrupt. And this scandal in England is good fun, Lance. Like, so many of these ministers and politicians have been caught fiddling their expenses in the most outrageous and ludicrous way.
Yeah.
And ministers, and they're all tumbling like ninepins. And every day, like, two or three more members of parliament have resigned, and a minister went yesterday. And it's like heaps of fun. But it's a way of saying, hey, you know, the comeuppance will come up, you know. Hey, they're going to all get their comeuppance one day, you know.
Yeah.
The truth be known, you know. The truth will be known, and it is known now. And, I mean, like, it's really, really sort of created a big storm in England, and I think the Labour Party is at its sort of historic low in the polls and so forth, but then the Conservatives and the others all doing the fiddles just the same, you know, so it's fantastic, good fun, you know?
Uh-huh.
Well, like, you know, everybody's got their hand in the cookie jar, you know?
Yes, exactly. From the top down.
Yeah, everybody, from
everybody.
The top down. Yeah.
And, it's interesting because the rabbit hole goes so deep. We suspect that there's an alternate, a whole second space program that's been developed by the elite that is connected with underground maglev trains that they use to go to, you know, these various facilities where they develop technology that's 10,000 years beyond anything that we're allowed to have.
That would be fantastic. I don't know. I do know about those underground train systems because I met a man who I believe was truthful that told me about a train that he traveled on underground from one city to another, you know?
Oh, yes.
And I mean, I don't want to say which cities, but it was in America, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
And he didn't travel in a train. He traveled in a sort of a chair that was on wheels that he was strapped into, and the chair just moved extremely fast. So it was like a capsule, let's say.
Yes.
With a seat in it. So, I mean, those things do exist. And how much is underground and above ground and so on, I'm sure. And all the conspiracy theories, I believe them all, more or less.
I do, too.
Yeah, sometimes when I'm bored at 3 o'clock in the morning, I go up on some of those radio shows, you know, like, I don't know, Alex Jones and stuff like that, and listen to all those guys who rant about the conspiracy. Well, I mean, hey, yeah, there is a global fascist conspiracy, you know. I mean, you'd have been an idiot to think there wasn't, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
So, hey, but in the end, it's love, and it's laughter, and can we go dancing tonight, and,
yes.
You know.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely, I totally agree with you. Project Camelot, ironically, is one of the places that talked about at least subjects quite a bit, and I thought it was funny that they're named Camelot.
Yes, I saw one of their YouTubes where they were interviewing somebody. I don't know much about them. Are they out in Arizona somewhere? Where are they? I don't know much about them.
I'm not sure what city they're in, but they were the second or third guest I had on the show about 5 years ago. And,
yeah.
You know, when I was first starting to get into all the conspiracy stuff, and they've done some magnificent work in the meantime.
Yeah.
And I'm pleased to see that they're successfully, you know, transitioning into just various subjects that are outside the box, you know, like the Indigo Kids and the Bariska Boy from Mars and things. I mean, these are all interesting things.
Yeah, there's something. People are interested in this sort of stuff, aren't they? They're all fascinated, you know?
No, absolutely.
And why not? Good luck. And I think whatever entertains them or informs them or assists them to become a better person, good. I endorse all of that stuff, all of the above.
Well, one thing about your book is that in spite of all the material about the ghouls and this and the and that and the other that's so dark, you have a wonderful sense of humor in there. And I found myself laughing throughout the book, and I hope I laughed at the right places.
It doesn't matter if you didn't. As long as you laughed. Yes, no, I've always put a bit of humor into my stuff. And,
yes.
One of the funniest books I ever wrote was a book called The Trick to Money is Having Some, which is all about abundance thinking and attracting wealth, but it is really, there's some comedy passages in that book that became classics, you know? So, yeah, no, I think we should laugh and take it lightheartedly, and then I don't think that we should be scared of the ghouls and the dark, because in many ways, once you face that, then you begin the healing process inside yourself, and when you deny it, you're more vulnerable. You're way, way more vulnerable. And so, hey, it's best to just face it and get on with it. You know, don't cause a fuss and just look at it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
No fear, no anger. That's what I tell people, and you'll be fine, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And then I genuinely believe, Lance, you know, I say almost every time I'm on one of these shows, you know, that the spiritual journey is only 4 feet long. It's 1 foot from your head to your heart, and it's 3 feet out there to embrace the first person you see. And that will redeem you. Love will redeem you. Kindness, generosity, acceptance, patience, you know, an equitable stance, a soft eye, and the desire to proceed, the desire to learn, and the desire not to deny things, and to embrace all cultures and all creeds and religions and whatever, you know. That's
mm-hmm.
it. You know, no more judgment. No more judgment. Forgiveness for everybody and love and acceptance. Live and let live.
Mm.
And then we'd all be free, wouldn't we, you know?
Well, yes, exactly. Exactly.
Because I think that, like, this whole business with the Al-Qaeda is a crock, because all you'd have to do to fix this whole Al-Qaeda rubbish is just dish out 10,000 green cards. Because in the end, those guys don't really want to fight the Americans because they admire them. They just want to come and live there and sort of, you know, bonk bimbos on Venice Beach. So, hey, dish out 10,000 green cards to the Al-Qaeda and the war's over, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because all they really want to do is be like us. They want to be like us, you know,
yeah.
And that's why. And when we deny them the right to be like us, they want to fight us. But if we could just embrace the Muslims and the Al-Qaeda people and make them our friends and respect their religion and give them a green card, hey, that's the end of the war, man.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, so it they can just drop the green cards by parachute and leave it at that, you know.
Well, it does seem that the current president is making overtures that I've never seen made by another president in many decades.
I saw one of his speeches where he seemed very open to discuss things, and I think he wanted to talk to Castro in Cuba and so forth. I thought, wow, that's amazing, you know?
Yes, it seems like a much more enlightened place to come from. And it's unfortunate that so many people just detest our president because he's black, but that
yes.
seems to be the gist of it, and they're bound and determined to see that he fails. But fortunately, the list of those people is very short, and
yes.
I don't think
he should
have
be given a chance.
Around.
He should be given a chance, and the African American people have put in a great amount of energy and creativity and power into the American system, and they're very responsible for formulating the American culture. So you can see that eventually, like, an African-American president would come to power. I mean, I predicted that there'd be a black president back in 92, 93, except I had him in power for 2005, so it was a few years early. But, I mean, I wrote it out in a book called Whispering Winds of Change, you know, and it, you know, like, you could see it coming, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
The same way as one day there'll be a Hispanic president, and one day there'll be a woman president, and one
yeah.
day...
Yeah.
You know, there'll be like a one-legged dwarf with a, you know, with a
single
eye in his forehead, you know. I mean, everything's going to be there eventually if we wait long enough, you know.
Well, I don't know if we'll ever see a gay president, but if we do, it'll be a very merry White House.
No, but I hope we do see a gay president, because he'll bring a bit of color, and it'll be a bit more lighthearted, and they won't be so hard on people, and not so judgmental and cruel, and all this macho shit about
yeah.
sending his kids off to die in the sun, you know. Hey, you know, I mean, yeah, I'm all in favor of gay president. You get my vote for sure.
I don't see why not, you know.
Yeah.
It's a diverse world, and I embrace diversity, and it seems like the old paradigm that is limiting and trying to control really is breaking down.
Yeah, they've got to give up. They're not going to be able to control it anymore. It's going to fall apart, you know.
They've had the control. Now they don't even have the illusion of control. And
yeah,
they're going to have
no.
to reconcile that with the real world that's here now. And they
yeah.
haven't been keeping up. I think they've been kind of stuck in the past.
Yeah, yeah, very much so, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have to have a charity for each other, you know. We have to have a charity. I mean, I say in my books, you know, you've got to love people even if you don't agree with them. You know, find people that you absolutely virulently don't agree with them and go and hang out with them and love them, you know.
Yes.
Do you follow me? I call it tea with Hitler. Then you sit there and have tea with Hitler and don't mention trains, don't mention the death camps, don't mention the war, and just sit there and make him right, you know, like, hey, talk about Tibet, talk about art, talk about his dog, talk about
right.
his girlfriend.
Right.
You know, don't make him wrong, you know?
Exactly.
Even though there's this horrendous person, you know, but hey, you know, just can you have a compassion for him? Can you forgive him? Can you be there for him, you know? And it's just a joke, it's a test, but it's like, hey, tea with Hitler, can you manage it, no? And sometimes the tea with Hitler is nothing more than like, I don't know, an afternoon with your bloody mother-in-law, but it feels like tea with Hitler, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
You know, and so there she is, and can you make the bitch right, even though she's horribly wrong, you know?
Right, right.
So there you go. So, yeah, man, we need forgiveness. You know, we need to love each other, forgive each other, and cut everybody lots of slack, because they're all trying. You know, some are scared, some are hopeless, some are not very well educated. But, hey, we've got to care for everybody.
Absolutely.
It's almost like we've got to bring all the children home in the end, you know. We're not allowed to leave people lying about bleeding on the sidewalk, you know, emotionally bleeding, you know.
Yes.
So there you go.
So you see hope in this final period of time that we're kind of on the fast track now, whether it's 2012 or 2013 or 2025 or 2011 or whatever, we are on the fast track.
Yes, no, I do. I believe it. I call it the renewal, you know.
The renewal.
It's like the renewal because it allows humanity to come again, to make it right, to be forgiven, to be absolved. And to find a new way, and I tell people, hey, come on, life, this is boring, let's evolve, you know?
Right, right.
Let's go to a new place, let's evolve, it can't be worse than here, you know?
Exactly.
So let go, let's evolve, become different, let's try something new, you know?
Yeah.
And come with me to the ayahuasca, you know, come with me to the dance party, come with me to the celebration, let's go hang out with some people we're not used to hanging out with, you
know?
Yeah,
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 I
let's
love that.
Let's go to a party with people that we're scared of. You know, hey, if you're scared of African-American people, I'll get yourself invited to a party, and let's go meet these characters and find out what it is that scares us. And of course, you go to the party, you have a fantastic time, and you realize you're not bloody scared at all. It's all a bunch of crook. You know, it's like hang out with the people that scare you.
Yeah.
Hang out with the people that irritate you. You know, love your tormentors. Love your tormentors. You've got to love everybody, especially love your tormentors.
Wonderful message.
Yeah, yeah. So that's my method anyway, Lance. You know, it's my sort of simple solution. Complex problems.
If you had to sum up what the most important message in your new book is, how would you phrase that?
I would say that, like, we're neither black nor white, we're gray. And to embrace the holistic nature of what we are is salvation, that's redemption. And then through softness and kindness, you're aligned to grace. Grace drives your life, it shows you visions, dreams, intuitive prompting, lucky good fortune, coincidences, and you move gently along, one step, going towards that higher place inside you. And hopefully people will see you and think, wow, look how good she's doing, or how good he's doing, and they'll come along with you, you know? Because in the end, we have to save everybody. We've got to look after everybody. We can't leave anybody behind, you know?
That's right. That's absolutely right. It's not a selfish proposition.
It's not a race for the line, you know, it's
right.
A one-man race for the line, you know?
Right, and it's so important.
We're only as good as the last straggler, you know?
Yes, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So that's it, you know, kindness. Kindness, generosity, respect, that's it. That'll get you through.
Well, Stuart, we're just about out of time, and I want you to be able to tell our wonderful listeners how they can reach you and find your articles and your books and everything. Would you do that for us?
Yeah. I mean, they can just Google me, Stuart Wild, StuartWilde. And I have a site, StuartWilde.com, StuartWildeBlog.com. I'm all over Amazon like a hot rash. I'm on Flickr, MySpace, YourSpace, ThisSpace, ThatSpace. I'm on pretty much everything. So they just got to go Stuart Wild, and there'll be inundated with stuff to read, you know?
Right.
So I think I've written 5 million words, so like,
oh my God.
Stuff everywhere. Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much, Lance, for having me on your show. It's been a delight.
Well,
it's been a real delight talking to you.
And I'm sure that there will be another book after the end of days.
Probably.
Maybe
yeah,
it will be the beginning of days.
The beginning of days. Actually, I do have another book coming out in a few weeks' time, but it's a different type of book. It's a book of Taoist stories, you know, from old China and stuff. You know?
Oh, good.
That's coming out in a few weeks' time. It's called Plum Red. But, yeah, so there was a book after the book.
Oh, wonderful.
Well, yeah,
Stuart,
thank you.
Thank you so much for being on the show. You've been absolutely wonderful. I love your work, and I encourage everybody to go get your recent book and your earlier books and just delve in and see what you think.
Yes, that's evolved. That's it.
Thank you so
much
for being
much,
with us tonight. We'll have to have you back again.
That's very honored. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Okay. All right. That's a wrap for the Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic and tonight with Stuart Wild. Thanks again, Stuart.